to feel sorry for Michael, the chief messenger of Israel, and of heaven, really. No, I can feel sorry for him, and I will feel sorry for him. Yeah, maybe he has a better life than us down here on earth. I don't know, but he's always associated with conflict. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Revelation series, looking into Michael, the chief messenger. That's his name, Michael. There was a church in my hometown of Canton, Ohio, named after him, Saint Michael. And I suppose he was depicted with wings. I didn't go there. I went to Saint Joan of Arc. That's right. I was associated with a woman who dressed as a boy, who had war and killing in her blood, and who was fiercely nationalistic. Obviously not a member of the body of Christ, or she wouldn't have cared. She would have gone about her merry way, eating croissants and French bread in Paris, or Rouen, or wherever she was, and never would have met her fiery fate. Joan, I'll see you again someday. This is funny, too. You know what our school was called? Our grade school? The St. Joan of Arc Dragons. How appropriate is that, seeing as how we're looking at the dragon and religion? You see, Paul wants to spare us all the trial that comes and all the inconvenience that comes with things like being burned at the stake. Paul wants to spare us, so he says, be subject to the superior authorities. I'm paraphrasing now, don't mount a horse with a spear or a sword and go gallivanting around the country, killing your enemies or persecuting those who you don't think belong to your particular religious sect. And if you do that, things will go well for you. So listen, back to Michael. Our knowledge of this chief messenger. What was the name of the Saint Michael people? Saint Michael, what was their mascot? I have no idea. I can't remember. Our knowledge of this heavenly being is fragmentary. We don't have much on him. He's mentioned three times in Daniel's prophecy and only twice in the Greek scriptures. Five times Michael is mentioned. That's the number of grace, so it's a nice number of times to be mentioned. If I were mentioned in the scriptures, I would want it to be five. And he's always connected with conflict. He's always battling something or someone, standing up for Israel. Israel's all about conflict. Israel is not only about wars, but wars with other countries, but wars with the self, with the flesh. And people want to be associated today with angels. I've spoken about this. They want to have little angel ornaments, little angel statues. And yet, Michael, the chief of them, the chief messenger, is one of conflict. And he comes into service of Israel. And Israel is all about conflict. Why in the name of God, dear, do people want to be Israelites and wrestle with the feasts? That's right, you wrestle with the feasts. No, you have to cook that lamb just right, and matzah, you have to just get it right. Even it's a wrestling match even to celebrate, quote-unquote, the Passover, in my humble opinion. So who is this guy? Well, look at this. In Daniel, here's a quote from Daniel. We talked about this earlier in the series, which is a long time ago now, a year and a half. The chief of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. Oh, that's what Gabriel said. But Gabriel is referencing Michael. Listen to this. This is what Gabriel tells Daniel. The chief of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the foremost chiefs, came to help me. One of the foremost chiefs. One of them. Okay, well, maybe he's not the top dog, but he's one of the foremost chiefs. Let's just say, to be safe, he's the chief of Israel. And we know that the chief of the kingdom of Persia was not the earthly king, but it was the particular demon or the particular adversarial spirit that was in charge of Persia in those days. All right. Tweaking the lighting here. Okay, folks. All right. So here in the unveiling, he fights for Daniel. Although Daniel is still dead. When these events are taking place, Daniel is still dead. But he's still fighting for Daniel and for his people. And later on, he explains further, Daniel does, that there was no one who strengthened himself concerning these things but Michael, the chief messenger. That's Daniel 10, 13, 21. Now, Jude mentions Michael. The writer Jude, in the Hebrew Scriptures, tells us that Michael, doubting the slanderer, argued concerning the body of Moses. This is a mysterious passage until you realize that it's not. It's not a mystery whatsoever. You just believe what's read. I'm going to get into that shortly, but even Michael did not bring a calumniating judgment against Satan, but he said, quote, quoting from Jude now, "May the Lord rebuke you. May the Lord rebuke you." He would not do it. He would not bring a judgment against the adversary because this is why. Well, for one thing, these two had met before. Yeah, Michael and Satan. They have a long history together, kind of like Mike Tyson and Tyson and Holyfield, the famous Tyson Holyfield fights, Evander Holyfield, or Ali Foreman. So here we have that in a very high realm, not Ali and Foreman, not Tyson and Holyfield, we have Satan and Michael. But Michael, as wise as this being is, recognized the power and dignity of his adversary. Now, he might have called him a liar because that's what he is, John 8:44, but he did not consider himself, listen to this, this is going to blow your mind, Michael, the one we are reading about in the unveiling, who is doing battle again with Satan and his evil minions and casting them from heaven, Satan dragging a third of them with his tail. He did not, Michael did not consider himself superior. In dominion and in glory. Wow. Even Satan. Well, Michael knows that were it not for the grace of God, because the grace of God and the choosing of God applies just as much to the celestial realms as it does here on earth. Michael could very well say, "There before the grace of God go I." So he didn't bring a railing accusation. You can bring an accusation, just don't attach a rail to it. Not a railing accusation. You simply accuse someone without railing. So we have to note here that Michael, going back to the body of Moses, Michael considered it his duty to protect the body of Moses. Don't know why. It was important that Moses get a proper entombment. And Satan apparently wanted to destroy the body of Moses. Maybe Moses' tomb was a shrine, much like Abraham Lincoln's shrine of our day, which I visited a couple months ago, and I relay to you the epicness of Lincoln's tomb in Springfield, Illinois. So Satan wanted to rip Moses head to feet, shred the poor patriarch, but Michael said no, and he battled him. So in Daniel's vision, we're brought up to the very time that we are now considering. We're now considering the crisis of Israel at the end of this eon, and Daniel prophesied about that. And this was his prophecy, Daniel 12:1. Listen to this. "And in that era shall Michael stand up, the great chief who stands for the sons of your people," speaking to Daniel, "and there shall be an era of distress such as never was since there was a nation until that era," that is the era into which John entered, "and in that era your people shall be delivered, all who are found written in the scroll," end quote, Daniel 12:1. So he's prophesying, Daniel is, of this time. And he says, Michael shall stand up. And now in the unveiling chapter 12, we find that very thing happening. Michael is standing up for the sons of Israel. And he's battling the adversary again. Michael is standing up and casting down to earth the slanderer, who then immediately inaugurates a fury. Talk about anti-Semitism. This is a furious anti-Semitic persecution such as there has never been. And never will be again, thank God. But the strange thing is, and this is, I'm puzzled about this, but in another way, I'm just going to go with this. It's strange that Michael battles Satan and he finally casts him down, but then Satan ends up wreaking havoc, not with the 144,000 because they're sealed, but with the other faithful Israelites who are struggling in that day. Can't deal with the son that comes from the woman, so he goes to, forget I just said that. He doesn't deal with it. He might be dealing with them. Let me go back. Another sign was viewed, great horn, the dragon stands in sight, devouring the child she brought forth, a male son who is about to be shepherding the nations. Her child is snatched away to God in his throne. Okay. So he, the son of the woman, the 144,000, and perhaps the vast throng also, are snatched away to a great place. Remember, the earth helps the woman, swallows the water. So Satan gets extremely infuriated, and he goes to the four corners of the earth, seeking other faithful Israelites, those who are not sealed. So I'm wondering, what kind of favor is Michael doing for the sons of Israel when he sends Satan down to earth, and then Satan begins this Jew-hating enterprise? Until you figure this is what I figure, is that it is an honor and a glory to be persecuted for the sake of Christ. And if you are martyred, if you're an Israelite in these days and you are martyred, you will have a greater entrance into heaven. You will have, as the writer of Hebrews says, a, quote, better resurrection. I think that's Hebrews 11. Who has a better resurrection, you ask? Those Israelites who suffer deprivation, who suffer evil at the hands of persecutors. The 12 disciples, especially Peter, James, John, being beaten by the Sanhedrin, Jesus Christ, obvious case, greater glory, greater honor, subsequent to the tortures of Calvary. So it's the same here. It's an honor for these Israelites to suffer for the sake of their Lord. So this event is a turning point in Satan's career. This is so great. Listen to this. It's a turning point because he's never in heaven again until he's changed, until he becomes part of the all in all, until he is reconciled to God through the blood of the cross. This is a turning point in Satan's career. He's cast to earth. And after he does his worst, the best of his worst on earth, he is chained for 1,000 years in the submerged chaos, in the earth. Notice, doesn't go back to heaven. Then, at the end of the 1,000 years, he gets up a rebellion among some doofuses and dummies on the earth who have not been satisfied with the peace and plenty of the millennium. And so, that rebellion is squashed summarily, and Satan is then goes to the lake of fire where he's tormented for the eons of the eons. I wonder if that hurts. Well, he's a spiritual being and can take it, but it's still going to have a salutary effect on him. He is going to be reconciled to God because of his trials. Well, yes, because of the cross, but his trials brings him to a realization of it. Right, thanks for that correction. His trials bring him to a realization of, just like us, why rob Satan of the same experience we've had that's been so good for us? We know that the whole creation was bought, redeemed by Jesus Christ at the cross. But it is only as we're given faith, as it is only as we go through these trials that bring us to an end of ourselves, that we realize our salvation. Satan is just as saved as we were even before we believed. But obviously he doesn't know about it yet. The lake of fire for Satan is going to change that for him. I'll finish now with a quote from A.E. Nock. Satan had his place among the sons of God in heaven. Now wrong is repudiated. Satan is cast down, banished from the celestial courts, imprisoned on the earth. It is the crisis of the eon, the turning point in universal history. The heavens are cleared of rebellion. And that rebellion is now concentrated on the earth.